interrupting the current neo-euclidean, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting episode BTWRLM 577. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. It's the only way that you're going to be able to take responsibility for you, notwithstanding what everybody around you doesn't do. Because being free is also not the procession to inclusive unity, as we see this week. Even inanimate paper entities bow to the fallible one now. Siskiyou Systems joins Microsoft, IBM, in Vatican pledge to ensure ethical use and development of AI. Siskiyou Systems Chief Executive Chuck Robbins signed a document known as the Rome Call and met privately with Pope Francis, the Vatican said. Pledge outlines key pillars of ethical and responsible use of AI. It emphasizes that AI systems must be read, used, and regulated to serve and protect the dignity of all human beings without discrimination and their environments. It highlights principles of transparency, inclusion, responsibility, impartiality, and security as necessary to guide all AI developments. As necessary, folks. Have people not heard that the King John gave the kingdom to the Vatican, which granted servitudes, makes its way through the peace treaties and agreements to amity and commerce, exploitation in America? Have they read their history documents? See what this Vatican's all about? What I've been talking about for mere ever, highlighted extremely the condition in 2015 coming on to us, and here we are now, almost another 10 years past, and they're folding in. Francis called for an international treaty to ensure AI is developed and used ethically, devoting its annual peace message of this year of this topic. So connect up, I said peace treaty, to this peace message and the positioning of that entity in the history of the world. The document was unveiled and signed at the Vatican Conference on February 28, 2020, just before Italy locked down as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. By Microsoft's Brad Smith and IBM's John Kelly III, universities and UN agencies, private corporations, and non-governmental organizations have signed on as well. So how is it not the question, what's not necessary when seeking greater exploitation for profits turns this pledge into an infallible, sustainable threat to everyone? How are we not going to be threatened by this? As they actually, if you listen to those ESGs, you see that that's what they said they're doing. And what have we seen proliferate here since 2020? All I can keep saying here is you knows them when you sees them, folks. You knows them when you sees them. That's international law, too. It came from the United States. Lincolnization through Lieber Code, Francis Lieber, General Law 100. Read the first one. Now international law. And to further the sustainable future that they want, controversial FAA bill passes Senate, promotes digital IDs, the mobile licenses, facial recognition concerns ignored. Keep tying all this, these corporations together with the big data and start tying all these together. You'll see we're a lot farther down the road than we were just even by 2020. But I've been telling you, they've been lying to you, saying they didn't understand what they were doing. Well, just to get your head to go down. They got you down with the COVID swindle. And everyone got focused on that. Everyone's still focused on that. I'm astonished. Legislation includes a push to introduce digital ID and digital or mobile driver's licenses and will be considered by the House this week, the final hurdle before, if approved, it gets signed by President Biden. How fast these folks are running. The section dealing with acceptance of digital IDs and driver's licenses is buried, and we found it on page 1015 of the document. It reads that the FAA administrator, quote, shall take such actions as may be necessary to accept in any instance where an individual is required to submit government-issued identification to the administrator, a digital or mobile driver's license, or identification card issued to such individual by a state. While adopting the bill, the Senate left out an amendment drafted by Senator Jeff Merkley meant to temporarily halt wider deployment of facial recognition tools at U.S. airports. The reasoning behind the amendment was that the current usage of facial recognition technology lacks transparency and results in travelers being poorly, if at all, aware of their rights in this regard. I want to highlight that. Most of us are just not cognizant of our rights in about any regard, but they're recognizing that most people don't know their rights. And that's going to show you there when you read this stuff long enough, you start realizing there are outs for us here and there. We just have to know what they are and where they are. The Senate chose to ignore the amendment of Merkley, which wasn't even put up for a vote, despite it making what appears to be a reasonable demand to ensure people can make informed decisions about participating in the schemes, namely, provide, quote, simple and clear signage, spoken announcements, and other accessible notifications about the ability to opt out. And we've been talking about this for a long time, but now you see the Senate bringing it in. They're not interested in that you know. You're presumed to have to know. And this is the point that's missing in this article, but that's why I keep saying you have to figure it out and you're going to have to do it on your own. I say your own, but a lot of you can get together, start figuring this out pretty quick. You can take what I offer as the path, the beginning of the path, the trailhead, and work it out. Take some of the things I say and start searching them out and find that they're there and how to use them. That's going to be the most important. Some of you have tried some of this and reported back to me and it worked out okay. You didn't get not touched. They'll touch you. They'll harass you a bit, but you're able to understand how to keep the opt-out even if they didn't tell you. You have to know that. Again, ignorance is no excuse. And I keep saying you're going to have to go read some of it, but your ignorance of the communicable disease law was no excuse. And see what they did with that. Nobody opted out. No one said, wait, I got due process. I want to insist on it. Moving on back to this article. Yet this is something U.S. Travel Association CEO Jeff Freeman dismissed as dangerous and costly, and Freeman doesn't measure cost here in terms of security and privacy of personal data, but traveler hours a year that would allegedly be added to wait times if travelers' rights were better protected. You getting this? When you go to protect your rights, they're going to drag you out. But Merkley noted in the post on X, Twitter, responding to Freeman's statement that this is not true, even according to TSA, whose site states that people opting out of facial recognition does not add to wait time. But did you hear the omission? Freeman's not just talking about facial recognition. And so this is where the problem is. You can almost expect that you're going to be stalled out. And that's going to take more. So you're just going to have to know your opt-out rights. And exercising those had better not cost any extra time. As you can relate to Merkley, I suppose. But who are you going to call? So I suggest you find that out, too. And include Merkley's number. Get him back on board. Again, you got to have multifaceted approaches. These are all going to be a waste of your time, hours, if you try to engage this system. And if you don't, everybody loses. You're going to lose. You don't have to worry about everybody. I'm saying it just nobody's stepping up. And you watch how most of society succumbed to a swindle, Kobe swindle, because no one stepped up to opt out. So also, you got to look at this and notice that the mandate is acceptance by the federal officer here, the FAA, to receive a state ID. And if you think, get a little careful here on what they're doing, because they included ID and driver's licenses. So, there is the actual spoiler in all this. It's the state. So how are you going to avoid the digital ID? What are the opt-out rights to avoid that massive vulnerability that doesn't exist if one doesn't have an ID? Because with the popular capitulation here, I can't see how digital ID won't be imposed or on an individual which is required to submit government-issued identification, as it is stated in that Senate proposal already. They are sort of working this thing backwards on people, aren't they? We've got to throw in the real ID. I'm not going to talk about it, but you got to throw that in. That's already been working. Again, this all came since 9-11, 9-11-2001. And this has all been working, and they've now worked this thing backwards. They're going to go ahead and give the FAA the authority to take the digital. That comes from the state. So one frame of consideration, what if I don't have or can't get one of those, for instance? What if I don't or have or can afford the digital equipment, nor do I have the competence to participate with a digital ID? And what if I can't meet the ID or driver's license application requirements? Now, I've been dropping nuggets the entire time of my broadcast for years on where to look for the inapplicable status. When you look within the requirements of an application, you find you don't apply. Most people just hand the information over. Most people try to find it in order to get it. It's your testimony against yourself. And I've, again, it's not a silver bullet, so I don't try to say, well, this is what you do, because you can do it and you're going to find your mileage is definitely going to vary. Some people will be able to talk their way through it and get it out. Some people won't. A lot of times you won't, because this is that serious. They do not want people to understand there is a being free, and they don't want people to see that or know it. Where people are finding out more and more and more, and we're going to have to come to terms with that, or else society is going to have to go and succumb to this overthrow. And there's been a long-term debate whether or not the people have been conquered. And I've been holding out that we're not, because in international law, to be conquered is you can't come back. An example of that would be the Native Indians in North America. They're not going to come back to any prominence as a people. And so we're about ready to have that happen to the people of the United States as an establishment. So you can talk tough about your guns, but you see there's lots of mechanisms to make those irrelevant. And I keep telling you about it. A lot of the times they've already got, they know who you are and what, how to get at you. And you haven't figured out that you have necessities in life. And they're going to interfere with that at all. If I kept telling you, look at what they're doing to Russia, or trying to do. And you'll see what your vulnerabilities are. And you're nobody. I don't know of anybody in the United States that has the capacity to defend themselves. And then you have to go to war. Or they call it special operations, which is different than what the West is putting up. So really think through what's going on here. But I've explained over time how to make yourself inapplicable to the application. It's not trying to find everything in it that you comply with. That's for those that need it. If you're trying to, you don't want one, you got to make sure that you can't comply. See, when you get all that figured out, or partly, then there's still the official criminals that will deny that free status to you and punish you, who are likely the only ones, because your fellow countrymen believe the lie that they live in the land of a free and a home of the brave, but never look up to see that they actually lived in the land of the fee and the home of the tax slave. So there's things are not looking good for those wayfarers, knowing that they can't actually be required, like the opt-out understanding. Well, unless they are occupied by foreign powers, and then that's a different view. I keep saying you got to really pay attention to where, how it's framed. It's the land of the fee and the home of the slave, tax slave, for a reason. Remember, the senators represent the states. The post-founding father era Lincolnized war of terror-controlled states is what they ostensibly represent. And that was adulterated by having people vote for them. Understand that, too. The people voted for the houses, the representative of the house, the states or the counties voted for the representation of the government in the other department, Senate. And so that's been all adulterated for a long, long time. So I ask people, it's not a silver bullet to give you a lot of answers. People will put it together and they won't know what to do with it. And it's not something you just know, put together and do it. You have to go through some experience. And I'm not sure that the people are willing or able right now to do that. And I think Kobe Swindle kind of proved it. There's going to be a handful of you. But think about that. Think that through, too. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying do it without jeopardy. Start taking a different tack. One thing I'll throw out here, but it's not a proof. I never fulfilled it, would be to truly understand the condition and then move through even the courts to get a declaratory judgment on how these laws affect you, because that's what the declaratory judgment's all about. You'll find that in your states as one, potentially one thing for you to try to set a foundation of law for you as relative to the relationship that is exists or does not exist relative to the statute law. But because the system is taken over, it's going to be very, very difficult. And so I've thrown out other things, and I don't want to get lost in all that, but about what we're facing. I would love to say people were knowledgeable and had application, even a little bit, but I'm not seeing it, and it's not an arrogance. I get people contacting me all the time that tell me that. I now see what you were saying. It's not so simple. You get to know this stuff, and then there's these criminals out there that come under the color of authority. And I've told you what that is. It's felonies, extortion, coercion, and extortion on the property, coercion on the rights. And then you realize, if you go to Title 42 USC 1981, that extortion, exactions, is a civil right. So if that doesn't warp your head a little bit on where you think you're living, I don't know. So I'm not so much into saying, oh, this thing will be an answer. I'm saying, get your record right, get the law right, get it understood. Not your opinion about it, but the, how it works. And I keep telling you that grant law, property disposal law, was a real eye-opener on how to straighten it up. It's real clear and real simple. People still mess that up. And so it's going to take a little bit of time here, but they're moving us out of our organic establishment. They're moving us out of our property, and they have to, so they don't have to give you due process. Understand what I just said about that relative to your communicable disease law? They have to give you due process because you are the thing of your own possession that they're interfering with, that they don't have the right to, unless they can show, as a government, they can show what? That demonstrable exigence. But then here we have the legislatures just going down to bring in the future that they want, the digital token citizen. And the executive is leaving no breathing room in the execution of that, even before it's even put or baked in. Biden's cybersecurity plan vows to support development of digital ID ecosystem. This is what we heard before, the ecosystem that the big data is talking about. These people are all integrated. It's fascinating how integrated they really are. They're scarily integrated. But the Biden White House has come up with an updated version of the U.S. National Cybersecurity Strategy Implementation Plan that, unlike the first, addresses the issues of and commits to supporting development of a digital ID ecosystem. Isn't it so convenient that the Pope is speaking the same language? If you thought the United States was different than that. The initiative is included in the document as one of the strategic objectives, the stated goal being to advance research and guidance that supports innovation in the digital identity ecosystem through public and private collaboration. Now remember what I've said in many prior broadcasts about collaboration and public-private innovation, fascism masquerading as non-existent democracy. Talked all about the process. This collaboration process is already in the federal law. I've talked about it before. You look at under advisory councils, and you'll see a lot about it. I've explained all about these things, and it's on the agency side, executive side. And that's where the savings clause come in, if you know. Those are your opt-outs. Meanwhile, the government promises to, quote, encourage and enable investments in identity solutions, with another promise being that these solutions will be secure, accessible, and interoperable while fostering all the good things like consumer privacy, economic growth, and financial and social inclusion. They don't tell you who's economic growth, that's for sure. Now, how much more sustainable development terms here do you need to see what this is about in that statement right there, right from the White House? Social inclusion means no token citizen left behind. That's fully consistent with the Senate's FAA administrator mandate to accept digital ID or driver's licenses. And I hope this, my astute listener, will understand that both ID and license then are in federal commerce regulated by the states. You'll identify that the ID comes from the same department as a driver's license. Essentially, your ID is a non-driver driver's license. You'll never find that term, so don't go look for it. But it's in coming through, and it's a part of the commerce system. But it's federally implemented. Title 49 is what we're talking about here, but the states don't talk about it. They talk about their motor vehicle code. And this is how they started to squander our knowledge of ourselves and move it, make euphemisms of things. And then the people that are in the seat of decision, like a judge or an administrative hearings officer, they just deny you. This is what I'm going to also put another little bit of a nugget you can't use yet, but you'll maybe understand it when I say it this way. That's why I went to find where are the limits of hearing officers and where are the limits of even judges to make decisions. And I've made comment to you, at least for patent land, the judges cannot interfere with that patent. That means they have no jurisdiction, have no power to interfere with the rights of that are given within the patent and are pertinent to that patent. You're not going, see, people are not listening too close to me. If you're thinking you're going and going in the system to get your rights. No, you're trying to go to the system and tell them they don't have the rights. The subtlety here is immense, and people aren't quite getting it. So, it's federal commerce is what we're dealing with here, and driver's licenses. And driver's is not possessive. It's not your license. It's a stat. It's an occupation, a driver's license. Okay, the whole word. And it's a license. It's a permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, which would be make profit from the highway if I go there. I'll go there just for the most people think that that's right. There's an argument against it, but I'm not going to go that far either because we can't get the first step. The license is underneath state police power. It's a permission or a certification or a permit to do something. You'll find those in your laws and your administrative rules as well in your states. So, but for motor vehicle code, it's mostly all federal, and so they have a special class of code as well on that. So, the commercial, let's get back to the commercial. I'm talking Vatican here. I'm talking about the king doing an amity and a commerce treaty or something of sort before the peace treaty, I think it was, back when, before this nation got attached to that. So, you have an ID that's a driver's license in commerce and soon to be a global consumerized token citizen. As I keep bringing this up, find it interesting these stories come together. So I'd ask again, what's in your wallet? And this digital identity ecosystem is not just implementing quickly domestically, but next week across the pond. I say that, my mind keeps going back. Do you understand just a few years ago, these governments were saying they didn't understand digital ID at all. They didn't understand digital tokens or blockchain or none of that. Look at what they're doing. The EU's controversial digital ID regulation set for 2024, mandating big tech compliance by 2026. Well, that's foregone when you already see that the big data is already talking to the Pope. Agreed. But they never define what they're talking about in that list of things. Whose ethics? Based in what foundation? If it's to make more profit? Yeah, okay, you're going to see where that's going to go real fast, and you're watching it. You're a consumerized token citizen. You are the product. The EU's new digital rules, the digital identity regulation, are about to come into force in effect May 20th, mandating compliance with big tech and member countries in supporting the EU digital identity wallet. What's in your wallet? Who's in your wallet? EU consent NGO specifically remarked that even the EUDI wallet alternatives will have to be put in place for those children too young to have a wallet linked to their identity. And what was I just talking about last week? That the situation of digital identity has to do with the competence, capacity, your status as a major, not a minor, contractual rights as well. And they're just glossing that right on over to pull this all together. This is the cradle-to-grave ID wallet, if we can put it in those known terms, that those words came out decades ago. Digital IDs can also be used to control access to essential services, potentially manipulating social and political compliance. The extensive data collection involved can lead to profiling and discrimination. Furthermore, the IDs are susceptible to hacking and identity theft, placing individuals at risk of financial and reputational damage. Often, citizens are coerced into participating without genuine consent, and the lack of transparency and oversight in these systems increases the risk of misuse. So, there's your vulnerabilities. They really don't care about all that. We can go through some of these words. I read these. I hope people pick this up. I read these words when my dictionary is going through my mind. They say citizens are coerced into participating. That means you had a right not to. You had a right to be doing something different. I read that sentence like, I better go find out what that is that they're talking about the coercive part. Every one of you should have a state statute that says that coming under the color of an authority that's by omission or commission that doesn't have a right to do that and is interfering with a right of yours, that's a felony. You should be able to find that. So I talk about for decades, decade and a half or so. Or as we move that from there to here, we start to apply these things. Parts of Paris will be off limits within a QR code this summer. Parts of Paris will be off limits without a QR code this summer. Remember that QR code is also a product code. That might be you. A consumerized token citizen. Global. The French capital, Paris, will be split into zones this summer, with anyone wanting to enter certain areas required to show a pass on their phone. Special measures will be in place throughout the city as part of an increased security around Olympic Games, which start in July. It mostly applies to people driving, but even pedestrians will need to show a QR code to enter an area called the Gray Zone around the River Seine in the center where the opening ceremony will take place. The codes will be checked at access points along the entrance to each zone manned by officers. The policy has echoes of the COVID pass system during the pandemic, when many countries introduced QR code passes stored in phone apps for people to prove they had been vaccinated and access certain venues or transport. To be granted a pass, people must show proof of identity, an identity photo, their addresses, and potentially other documents, including vehicle registration document or a proof of from their employer. Remember all the vulnerabilities we just heard in the last story. Applying for a QR code in games is free, folks. Just like that first hit of heroin I've heard from a good friend who luckily was able to shake it. Took him a long time. He said it was the toughest thing he ever did. After that free hit. Pass is free, and people who already have tickets to events do not need to apply for a separate pass unless they want to access the area in advance. Well, why wouldn't they? It's all digitized. It's like on blockchain, right? It's in the phone. And so I thought of this, and I've just, from what I was talking about, what if you just can't? What if you don't? What if you don't comply? What if you don't have all the requirements for something to attach to you? What if you set it up so that's the fact? Instead of trying to give them all the information to make it so, what if you just decide it can't be so? So what if you don't have a phone? And you live there now, folks. Think about this. People live in the area. It's their home. And if they don't have a phone, then what? Then who pays for that phone? Or the data plan? Are the forehead and palm implants indicated here next, then? All this doesn't sound like it's out of the ordinary all of a sudden. COVID swindle told us that people just go ahead and do it. We hear the stories, they're already getting the RFID rice seed in their hand. But it may be on to infinity and beyond with all this interconnectivity. Hubble Network makes Bluetooth connection with a satellite for the first time. Hubble Network has become the first company in history to establish a Bluetooth connection directly to a satellite. A critical technology validation for the company, potentially opening the door for connecting millions more devices anywhere in the world. If you thought Elon Musk was onto something, I'm talking about the danger of Bluetooth here, and in particular the low-power one. It's actually farther. But these folks have figured it out. It's interesting what people don't think about, and then somebody says, ah, have we ever tried that? And everyone looks at them and thinks he's crazy, and they try it. In this case, they put Bluetooth in a satellite, and it actually worked that far. This was the big deal. It went way farther than they had thought. But cosmic connectivity through private corporation mesh networks exploiting their consumer token citizen is what came to me when I was reading this stuff. The Seattle-based startup launched its first two satellites to orbit on SpaceX's Transporter 10 rideshare mission in March. Since that time, the company's confirmed that it has received signals from onboard the 3.5-millimeter Bluetooth chips from over 600 kilometers away. Existing IoT devices are power-hungry, costly to operate, and lack global connectivity, the company says. These are fundamental limitations related to Bluetooth-enabled devices today, and they prevent many industries from leveraging IoT for their business. And what have we have found out from the carriers themselves, leveraging your identities, your information to third parties and beyond? Now, their signals can go to infinity and beyond, apparently. On the space side, the company also patented a phase array antenna that can launch on a small satellite. The antennas work almost like a magnifying glass, and it's what enables an off-the-shelf Bluetooth chip to communicate. The sky is truly the limit for space-enabled Bluetooth devices. The startup says its technology can be used in markets including logistics, cattle tracking, smart collar for pets, GPS watches for kids, car inventory, construction sites, and soil temperature monitoring. Caro said that the low-hanging fruit is those industries that are desperate to network coverage every once per day, like a remote asset monitoring for oil and a gas industry. And I noticed it didn't mention chattel tracking. Got close with cattle, but no. Chattel, you know. An item of tangible, movable, or immovable property, except real estate and things such as buildings connected with property. Tangible or intangible, movable property. Sound like you, maybe, folks? An enslaved person held as a legal property of another, bondman. Right out of the definitions for you, folks. It's all right there for us to see. We just put it together. And we think about it just a little bit. In this case, bound by blockchain to your responsibility to comply with an ESG obligation of your third-party MasterCard owner. The token citizen being tracked globally under the magnifying glass of Bluetooth-enabled satellites. How fascinating. It really is cool technology if you think about it. But when the world went evil, it didn't look so promising anymore. And what if that magnifying glass scrutiny Bluetooth absconded data presumes a criminal on the run and a fat bounty for a capture, whether or not true? It's now going to be built right into the case of it. Android 15 new privacy push includes theft detection and secret app locker. Google can now tell when your phone gets snatched and lock it down. The second beta of Android 15 is here, bringing along a handful of useful features to enhance the operating system security. Google now allows, is it your operating system, folks? Now allows Android users to have a tighter grip over the phones, thanks in part to a new trick that could become a nightmare for a grab-and-run thieves. Dubbed Theft Detection Lock, this new safeguard uses motion sensors to recognize the telltale jerks and tugs of somebody snatching your device out of your hands or off the table. When it detects those movements, it automatically activates a lock screen to block access. Block access to you to preserve the evidence against you is how I'm reading all this. I hope you're hearing it. If they can give you the ability to do it, they can sell that ability to a third-party government to do it to you faster. And these phones are just so convenient, aren't they? Just so convenient. Yeah, for the government Siberian panopticon, as I'm reading through this between the lines of what they're doing with this technology. I hope you're hearing it. I'm not stopping on a lot of the words that are highlighting it. I hope you're hearing it. Another noteworthy addition, it says here, the private space, a segregated section of your app drawer for sensitive content. Perhaps there are finance apps you don't want prying eyes to see, and a dating app's best kept private. Just place them in the secret vault, and they'll require authentication for access. Unless there's a back door, and now the third-party trespasser knows where to look and has lockout access behind the scenes, isn't it? And if you lock private space, Google pauses those apps entirely so they can't leak info via notifications or background activity. Or that anyone who has infiltrated and looking around that might trigger a notification or background activity that can be tracked down after the fact won't be seen either. So Android has evolved into what tech enthusiasts, maybe like technocrat enthusiasts, like to call mature operating system, and there are only so many groundbreaking enhancements Google can make. So it's no surprise that the latest iteration of the OS was pushed to the second day of I.O. With generative AI goodies occupying most of the first. The big data or go home digital ID spies who love you, folks. Is this mind blowing your mind on what they're all of a sudden doing here? This week started to blow my mind that it was all in play. They're not bashful about bringing it forward. And your thoughts might now automatically turn what do you put into that private space with the back door with this next report? Mind-reading technology transforms thoughts into text. Well, they say you have a private vault. What if they have one too? In an unprecedented scientific achievement, experts have developed a system that is capable of reading human thoughts and converting them into text. The technology was designed by GrapheneXUTS Human-Centric Artificial Intelligence Center at the University of Technology, Sydney. We heard about what they did in Australia this year with the COVID swindle for these last 4 years, didn't we? The portable, non-invasive system stands as a significant milestone, offering transformative communication solutions for individuals impaired by conditions like stroke or paralysis, or the presumption of guilt, I suppose. However, the potential applications of this mind-reading technology extend beyond aiding speech-impaired individuals. There you go. The research paves the way for fluid human-machine interactions, potentially enabling seamless control of devices such as bionic arms or robots. This could ultimately lead to a new era in assistive technology. Please hold out just another thought on the side. You might be that bionic robot. If we understand some of the things that we've been hearing going on with the technology and the mRNA technology and the software of life. And the other stories I brought forward about preparing a creature like a dragonfly to receive the machine to be used by that machine, and being the organic part of it. The core of this technology lies in its ability to record and decode brain activity through an electroencephalogram, CAP. Participants in the study silently read text while the CAP captured their brain's electrical activity. The EEG data is then processed by an AI model named D-Wave, a creation of the UTS team. D-Wave distinguishes itself by translating EEG signals into coherent words and sentences, learning from extensive EEG data set. Quote, it is the first to incorporate discrete encoding techniques in the brain-to-text translation process, introducing an innovative approach to neural decoding. The integration with large language models is also opening new doors in neuroscience and AI. Again, it's like AI becomes this big sponge. It needs more data, bigger data. And because that's possible, because mind-reading technology is becoming much closer to reality. mind-reading instruments may sound a little far-fetched, but researchers are getting closer and closer to developing this type of technology. Experts from the Door Institute for Research and Education designed a study to determine what songs individuals were listening to when reading their minds with a magnetic resonance MR machine. The research team presented 40 pieces of music to 6 study participants, including classical, rock, pop, and jazz tracks. Neural response to each song was recorded by the MR machine, while a computer learned to decipher the patterns of the brain activity associated with each song. The computer accounted for musical features such as tonality, dynamics, and rhythm. These types of studies focused on brain activity patterns and machine learning will evolve to decode written and spoken language in the future. Quote, machines will be able to translate our musical thoughts into songs, said co-author Sebastian Hoffel. And the new technology paves the way toward mind control. Metamaterials, artificial composites made out of metals and plastics that are engineered to have properties not found in natural occurring materials, have attracted extensive attention from many fields due to their extraordinary physical properties and have provided scientists with innovative methods of designing multifunctional artificial materials. Recently, their two-dimensional counterparts called metasurfaces have been found to offer even more amazing opportunities by providing unprecedented freedom in manipulating electromagnetic waves. A new study published in the journal eLight has now outlined the first step toward real-time, remote, and wireless mind control on these metasurfaces. Let me interject again. The body becomes prepared before they can attach the technology. As I was reporting about how they got that to fly, they literally flew a dragonfly with a mechanical package. Electrodes went in. They had to prepare the dragonfly to accept these inputs and the physical nature of it. They mounted that physical hardware on, and that physical hardware was able to literally fly the dragonfly. The dragonfly was pretty much helpless. The programmable meta surfaces with multiple or switchable functions can be realized through on-site programming and be further integrated with sensors or driven by predefined software. The software of life, like, goes into your cell and starts creating the DNA hybrid. Until recently, though, the switches among the different functions of PMs relied on manual manipulation, and their operational framework was wire-connected and non-real-time switched. However, a team of researchers from the Air Force Engineering University and the University of Singapore has now proposed the concept of remotely mind-controlled metasurfaces that can use human brainwaves collected in real-time and transmitted wirelessly from the users in order to control these materials. Wirelessly, and then you get to the Bluetooth. What can come back in control? Whatever goes out as a control can come back as another control. Remember I talked about the rat. Everyone was amazed. The rat was flipping his tail, and the rat's just saying, no, he's telling the other guy, the guy, they were saying that this test subject was causing the rat to flip his tail, and I'm saying, no, the rat was telling the individual that looked like was doing the controlling, don't do more than flip my tail because I don't want to be embarrassed. And so the guy only was able to flip the rat's tail. The power of controlling objects with the mind has been a popular fascination for humans. One possible path is to employ brain signal collecting technologies together with emerging programmable meta surfaces whose functions or operating modes can be switched or customized via on-site programming, predefined software, the study authors wrote. The scientists used Bluetooth to transmit brain waves wirelessly from users in order to control the electromagnetic response of PMs. Such a design offers users a groundbreaking way of manipulating electromagnetic waves by means of their brain waves thus coming extremely close to the telekinesis, a phenomenon that until recently belonged solely in the field of science fiction. In future research, the scientists aim to combine this innovative technology with intelligent algorithms in order to improve the efficiency of these processes. RMCMs could find application in a variety of fields, including health monitoring, 5G, 6G communications, and the development of smart sensors. So let's go back to that phased array that I talked about in that one article that they're using for Bluetooth. That's how 5G, no, not today's 5G. I'm talking about the millimeter, the actual millimeter wave and better. These numbers are irrelevant. 4G is the actual base and foundation of it all. The 5Gs are trying to manipulate these signals in order to allow for the same infrastructure to give what you think is better service, but it's really not. More refined from the carrier. When it gets into the higher technology, the shorter range is why they have to have more antennas. That is phased array antennas. That's how they pinpoint where you are. They have flat panel antenna systems with many array parts, elements, that focus in, that can focus in and where you're at, and they communicate back and forth. That's why we've been talking about that behind the shed for quite a while now. So they're not bringing this up, but they are using Bluetooth, as I said before. How dangerous that's going to be. It seems so simple. Oh, it just runs my earphones. My wireless earbuds. Well, you know, it's going to do a whole lot more here as we watch it happen and roll out. Of the few I've seen here, what came to my mind while reading these stories was the movie Brainstorm. The few movies I've seen here. And it started adapting a little bit of what we've heard in the last few tabs. And it starts to become not just sitting in a chair recording your thoughts to feed to someone else. It actually is ability to manipulate the meat suit. You just become a ride-along, like the dragonfly. So what if people were eventually altered, maybe by the software of life technology, to be these programmable meta-services subject to another's electromagnetic wave manipulation? Because your behavior is what's profitable. I mean, beyond money. Look at what they're doing. Look at the kind of controls that they're getting around all of this and the technology that's coming. And we hear things like Elon Musk, maybe not, he's got a sensor, a Neuralink. They have some problems right now. A couple of the leads got pulled out. They were able to reprogram it so the guy can now get a little more function. And yet, they're talking here about not needing all that, and that's the neat part about it. But we already have the technology. Now they talk about a skull cap. No, they can. You put that phone next to your head, that close, it gets amplified easily. Vince, there's not much now stopping the ability to get these. We've heard about infrared lasers, if you will, to be able to put that on light. Right? And so there's electromagnetic waves are radiated, and they just need an antenna. They need a way to transmit themselves, move themselves, and be essentially sympathetically responded to in the environment. This is all simple technology, and what I've told you for repeatedly over the years, when I was in R&D, our problem, when we were coming up against a wall, about the technology couldn't allow speeds. It's laughable now, the speeds that were then, but even then it had a problem. The materials were not good enough. They had to design new materials. These new metamaterials, new metasurfaces, are what I've kind of been saying needs to come out, and they are. They get developed, and now we see, if you will, a quantum leap into the abilities to use it. It takes these materials that are designed by people in order to do this. So it's really fascinating stuff. But again, when you understand the underpinning, everything runs by a profit or a control now. And on a diminishing number on top of that, there's a whole different complexion, I should say, coming upon us on these matters that may not be so pleasant. And so one of the things I wonder about is how do people, as we watched the response of people in the Covey swindle, the majority of the population of the world accepts this stuff. I'm not sure where that leaves the rest that won't. And I don't have all that answer. I never have. Just try to get enough people to understand how if we just don't, then there won't be enough of it out there. The problem with the India, I don't talk about these, a lot of these issues because, oh, we're looking at India's debanked or unbanked people. No, that is the problem. That's a problem for the government who wants to bring the digital IDs in. There's no phone. There's no connection to these. A third of their population is a serious problem. If you are that third of the population in where you live, that you're not technologically savvy, don't have the equipment, can't afford it, and you can keep batting down and batting away their attempts to bring it on, like the Obama phone was a way to solve that. They hand you the phone. So you better have an answer beyond that. Like, I'm just all thumbs and this just doesn't work so well. Or I'm dyslexic. I don't even know how to work this thing. You really got to consider becoming really dumb in order to avoid some of this stuff and stop giving them all the answers that think that you're so capable and smart. When they're coming up, they're smart, is not too intelligent. And they just want you to believe that it is. And so here, adopt it. It's so convenient. So convenient. But anyway, fascinating stuff. Mind control using science fiction, we thought. And it's in this technology. And I can just suggest to you, I certainly can't prove it, I can just suggest to you that technology is now because they knew about it before. As I say that, I understand that DARPA, we're told, is like 20 to 25 years ahead. And we're now being told what this is today. I can only imagine where it goes in less than 25 years. And this is... You can just watch the leaping of the technology moving right along over time. And then these materials come out and they allow the science, what was science fiction is now brought into reality, becomes a tangible feature in your life. And then in this case, it's by your consent. How do you opt out? What is your opt out rights? I've been offering how you go look for them. I think it's going to be imperative that people understand that and to not engage this technology the way it's being implemented. We do not know the technology. We do not know the construction of the technology. We do not know who controls the technology once it's been put into something. We can see the controllers and what they want to do. But none of them I can see are nice, to say the least. But going through this world, the digital thing world, they're going to try and take out money. What about money here? De-dollarization bombshell, the coming of BRICS, decentralized monetary ecosystems. What we're seeing, one of the themes in this, all of a sudden, we're getting these terms. They're not new. They're just being made more prominent, the ecosystems. They use those to cover up, it was like the environment. They conflate pollution with global warming. Want to bring in environmental factors that are really more politics. They are politics. Have nothing to do with your natural environment. But this word ecosystem has an emotional attachment. It has a promoted attachment. It has an agendized attachment that people are susceptible to accepting. Oh, the great ecosystem. Well, they're not talking about all that. They're talking about itself. They're talking about the people pulling the strings on the backside of it. Yeah, behind the woodshed. But welcome to the unit here, a concept that has already been discussed by the Financial Services and Investment Working Group set up by the BRICS and the Business Council and has a serious shot at becoming official BRICS plus policy as early as 2025, according to Alexei Subotin, founder of the Archangelic Capital Management and one of the unit's conceptualizers. This is a new problem-solving system that addresses the geoeconomic issue of these troubled times, a global crisis of trust. When I see that statement, I just keep thinking back, was the thing with Russia a setup? And I have to say, maybe it was. Again, we can't prove it. I just see them by what I just know them when I see them. And it looked like it went down the track it was supposed to. And then they used it for a dual use, right? The war and this moving into sustainable development globally. Russia did. Putin did. And the crisis of trust. In God we trust is on our money. There's another theme sitting here. And they speak to it, but it's not for us. And our when we lose trust, we should absolutely lose it in them and not even continue to embrace it. But we don't kind of do that. Alexei Stubotin knows all about it firsthand. A seasoned financial professional with the experience in investment, banking, assets management, and corporate matters, Stubotin leads the UNIT project under the auspices of IRIAS, an internationally intergovernmental organization set up in 1976 in accordance with the UN statute. The global majority has had enough of the centrally controlled monetary framework put in place 80 years ago in Bretton Woods and its endemic flaws. Chronic deficits fueling irresponsible military spending, speculative bubbles, politically motivated sanctions and secondary sanctions, abuse of settlement and payment infrastructure, protectionism, and the lack of fair arbitration. In contrast, the UNIT proposes a reliable, quick, and economically efficient solution for cross-border payments. The transactional UNIT is a game changer as a new form of international currency that has been issued in a decentralized way and then recognized and regulated at national levels. And I just have to say, you really have to learn inside of this. I've been talking about it. This is not really decentralized. It ends up going to a centralization. It has to. It's on the blockchain. Listen to the sustainable development words and its origins out of the UN. And then I offer whatever I told you before, whatever they call it, it's going to be very similar to that SDR that was created back in the 90s or so to do this, the basket of currency, to bring the whole world's economy into parity, unity, another type of unity. Moving to the article, back to the article. This is a big deal here. I don't want to undermine this. This is a big deal, but I'm pointing out, I've been talking about this to expose to us the discussion on how it's moving the world, the globe along to the future that they want. And I almost sit here to think about, is this the new system? But no, this is the replacement name for the SDR system, which was the same thing. It all ends up being that same part. But now, to the practical level, as Subotin explains, the UNIT ecosystems may be easily scaled, Vince, easily scalable, because it comes from the fractal architecture supported by simple rules. New UNIT nodes can be set up by either sovereign or private agents following a detailed rulebook in custody of the UN chartered IRIAS. The UNIT organizers employ a distributed ledger, a technology that ensures transparency, precluding capital controls and any exchange rate manipulation. Let me just tell you, that's the blockchain, and it's not decentralized. This means, on the article, this means that the connection is available to all open DEX and digital platforms operated by both commercial and central banks around the world. The end game is that everybody, essentially, may use the UNIT for accounting, bookkeeping, pricing, settling, paying, and saving, and investing. And here's the key takeaway. BRICS Plus, as well as the global majority, can only be strengthened by developing closer geoeconomic ties. The removal of Western speculative capital shall free up local commodity trading and enable the pooling of investable capital for sustainable development. To unlock such a vast potential, the UNIT may well be the key. And there you have it, folks. The global warden, the Siberian panopticon, everyone will be blockchain to. Now understand, this one is to interoperable border crossing. Then they just attach it onto your local token citizenship. Again, underneath the ESGs. It's right here, folks. The foundation laid for your token citizenship responsibilities to the third party sustainable development ESG obligations are fulfilled by the prison unit where the blockchain to your cell is. And that certainly doesn't sound like sovereignty to me. This is what they try to come under as the nation. So we have our independent sovereignty. I told you that's bunkus. I talked to you about the South African, the African leaders don't even, I don't think they have a clue, otherwise they're change agents. There's no sovereignty in this. It's subject to these guidelines and subject to, it's how your money gets done over on a global system, and they bring up the global majority being able to be working together, as I told you. How fast is it really coming together? Pretty fascinating. But we want to talk about other things. I don't know what it is, and we don't, more importantly, I only talked about it to show us it's here. It's something we need to really work hard to avoid. And I don't see many people really understanding that this is not waiting for some representative to do it. You're going to have to start positioning yourself right now to get off the railroad tracks that have been built and the trains coming on time, whether we knew it or not. And here, de-dollarization BRICS and the promotion, and I told you Russia, sustainable development, China, sustainable development, all the people coming out with sustainable development. You see it right here in that monetary system called the unit. Could have been called an SDR for all I care. It doesn't matter. That's what they're doing. And Putin here as well, to go back to this, is kind of like the hub of where it got started. Is he's not messing around pushing when he's pushing the Siberian Panopticon with his latest reappointments in Russia in the new government. If you're watching, as I told you, watch Russia. They're leading on this thing aside from the Ukraine. There's another thing running, a couple of things actually. But we see Russia has this new government that they had to put together on the elections, and Putin just appointed, or proposed that he was accepted, tried and tested. Putin reappoints Mikhail Mishustin as a new Russian prime minister. Russian President Vladimir Putin has selected the most experienced and effective officials to navigate the country's economy amidst global geopolitical shifts and the emergence of a new multipolar environment. Should explain everything you need to know about where Putin is driving Russia beyond what Alexander Dugin professes are the return to traditional values. Mishustin appears to me to be a full-on and capable technocrat. When you look at his background and what he's done in the last 10 years even, coming out of relative obscurity from being a longtime head of a Russian tax service, where he was praised for making tax tracking and collection more efficient and moving it into a digital realm. This is the guy here that did that. To being chosen seemingly out of the blue from the position to the prime minister of Russia, Putin brought him in on here January of 2020, right before the great Comey swindle, the great psychological cash is dirty reset. So Mishustin is the most experienced and effective amidst the global geopolitical shifts and the emergence of the new multipolar environment, Putin said. This is not an observation. This is the guy who's pulling this together is actually saying this. This is not a prime minister only interested in his domestic traditional value obligations, but to bring Russia into a more sustainable development world globally, is what this guy's doing. And I caught when he came into the news, he was talking about making tax collection more efficient and easier. It's more convenient. But I realized that that shift was going to be permanent. The KGB agent in Putin is not too far behind him. It's right here. They want to know about everybody. And, having the reputation as the top tax man, he created what is purported to be the future of tax administration, digital, real-time, and with no tax returns. The authorities receive the receipts on every transaction in Russia from St. Petersburg to Vladivostok within 90 seconds. There's your two-minute city, folks. Just what I've been talking about. The information has exposed errors, evasion, and fraud in the collection of its consumption tax, the VAT, value-added tax, which has allowed the government to raise revenues more quickly than general Russian economic performance. The new system is directed more at shopkeepers than oligarchs, or the they will have a separate system. The system has been developed is further described by its most noteworthy aspect of Mishustin's tax reforms being their systematic nature and reliance on big data blockchain technology that allows the government to track every commercial transaction, no matter how small. In other words, it's a massive and intrusive surveillance system. And there is the token citizen servitude monitored different than the they in the new Siberian panopticonocratic digital gulag is not a traditional value Putin is said to embrace for the Russian people. The question for Americans, do you see the dominoes are set up or quickly setting up here for your fall, just as in the traditionalist Russia? I sure hope so. I'm saying that traditionalist Russia, we got a lot of people in this country that want to think traditional, and that's not wrong. But that's not what's coming up. They can use those words, but that's not what they're doing. Make America great again? Those folks don't want to make America great again. They want you to think that they're going to make it great again. And they're bringing these systems in, and everything they do will fulfill that. So, are we going to resist? Operation Hindsight 2020 is an indication that we likely won't. It likely is not going to happen. They're going to do it. So, those of you that are listening and continue to listen, prepare for a very cold and austere economic tokenized likely perpetual winter, despite global warming. This is episode BTWRLM577. You can't go wrong when you get yourself behind the woodshed to stop these folks from doing this to you. And this is for the top of the hour. If you made it through or you started late, and I give you to go find the blogcaster if you want links, these links, if you're not live with Soundlines, on a numbers of syndicated spots now. I mean, he's telling me tens of thousands now coming through weeks. I think I saw the RLM live on Rumble. It's almost 7,000-8,000 views. So I hope people are sticking around and listening, and I hope you come and repeatedly listen, because what I talk about is not done to you and handed to you like a form. If I did that, you wouldn't hear about it anymore. You wouldn't hear from me. And I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm telling you what to look at, what to do, what you might find to go do. Because everybody's case is different. Everyone's situation is different. But this is, again, on the table, what's going on in this ecosystem. This global warming excuse, we're going into this extended winter of austerity economically. But the Kremlin could care less about global warming. Moscow breaks record for May snowfall. The temperature in Russian capital on Thursday lagged 1.5 months behind the normal climate calendar, where meteorologists have said. The snow that fell in Moscow on May 9th was the first ever recorded on that day of the year in the capital, the head of Russia's hydrometeorological center, he said. The snow reached a depth of 1 to 5 centimeters in various parts of the city on Thursday morning during preparations for the Victory Day parade on Red Square. Roman Vilfed told Interfax News on Friday. Temporary snow cover was recorded on May 9th for the first time in the entire period of meteorological observation. Folks, global warming, boiling oceans. It was such a cold day that its climate corresponded to March 26th, meaning Thursday's temperature lagged 1.5 months behind the usual climate calendar. And the chief specialist at the Weather News Agency, Vito Novosti, Tatyana Poznayakova, said that the average temperature on Thursday in Moscow was 1.7 degrees centigrade, 35 degrees, making it the coldest May 9th since 1972. Take note, since 1972. Oh, this is reoccurring. Okay. So it's cold, but it has not happened before. Moscow's cold snap follows the warmest April in 23 years, as the Gizmeteo website said last week. The average temperature last month stood at 10.9 degrees centigrade, which was 5 degrees centigrade above the norm. On April 2nd, a record of 23.2 centigrade was recorded, according to Gizmeteo. After the morning chill, thermometers rose to 6 degrees centigrade by afternoon, and the snow melted, she wrote on Telegram on Friday. However, the day's average was still 10.8 degrees centigrade lower from the norm. What's to be made of this? Likely not much. It's weather, naturally. Highly variable, right? This is this year with the help of El Nino. Remember him? Yeah. It's still going on. We're still being the effects of going on, right? Yeah, he just went home, though, I understand, and back in just at the end of April here, and all that weather that El Nino lifted, all that water that El Nino lifted into the atmosphere is coming back out. And you've been watching the floods this year happen all over the places, and in this case, snow. We've been hearing the recent floods around the world indicate or like in the form of snow during the temperatures as cold as before in 1972. This is all variable. It's all routine, even though we're actually lower than historic highs and, if you will, carbon dioxide too. We shouldn't sustainably panic because this variability is organic. It's something the technocrats are loath to tell anyone lest their usefulness in the world disappears, like that snow did by noon. We can already see why Russia wants to get everybody on this blockchain, too, if we continue down that thread. But please don't confuse this next notice here as a report about a Russian MMA star evading taxes. Again, read between the lines on these things. MMA star Khabib has accounts blocked over $3 million tax debt. Some of former Russian UFC lightweight champion firms now reportedly closed over irregularities uncovered by Russian authorities. The former UFC lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov of Russia has run into a $3 million debt with the country's tax authorities. Outlet MASH reported. The Dagestan-born MMA star has reportedly had bank accounts belonging to his Eagle FC promotion as well as his charity fund blocked. In a post on its Telegram channel on Saturday, MASH alleged that Nurmagomedov has failed to pay taxes to the tune of more than 300 million rubles. I think you divide by 100 on that and you get the right number. But after the athlete bid adieu to the octagon, he embarked on a number of business ventures, including dietary supplements and restaurant chain and hotels, to name just some. Russia's Federal Tax Service eventually launched an investigation into the former UFC champion and uncovered irregularities in documents, leading to the closure of new firms, the outlet says. In his mixed martial arts promotion company, Eagle Fighting Championships, is allegedly awaiting the same fate in the new future. So now consider your token citizenship on a blockchain scrutinized by AI and a hungry for praise technobureaucrat that's been raised by Mishutkin in making more efficient tax collection on an irregularity for better collection to the government. You don't have to think you aren't criminal here is the other thing, especially under agency administrative rules. Remember, there's no property there. These are irregularities that got this guy in trouble. Consider yourself the token citizen in the same position. Some bureaucrats looking at you and saw an irregularity. AI figured out an irregularity. AI error prone finds an irregularity. Irregularities are not criminal. It's not even a violation yet. Yet the technobureaucrat is on your case and in your wallet. Let's apply the news of today. Again, this is not about an MMA tax evader, or if anything. This is what we're stepping ourselves into as a world of people. Governments are loving this. So you apply it to something like this to what's going on. And I'd have to ask, do you know the tax code? You know, those civil rights laws, do you know them well enough to never make a mistake? Even a mistake that's made by the taxing technocrat? Well, how could you? All right? I'm pausing. How could you know when they're making it up? This is my, what I've been telling you. You don't have to be wrong. You don't have to never do wrong. But just an irregularity gets you in trouble. And so one time in underneath this future world, you could be guaranteed opening that wallet of your life to find, and it's gone, folks. It's how simple the token citizen behavior will be controlled. Even if after the fact, after you've argued with AI, being kicked from the department to department as corporate customer service does now, and then you've lost anyway, well, the government got theirs back. And this is not limited to just taxes, but every other administrative code section governing your life with the consent of the governed. What I keep telling you about, go read about it and learn how not to give that consent. And if they do something, you have the due process to bring it into challenge. Now you add the new normal, the token citizen obligation, to the shared responsibility to the Sustainable Development Committee, a community. You have taxes, exactions, extortions, is one thing that the state has a monopoly on, and that it is for national security they'll blame also. You have on top of that sustainable development goals as your obligations to Gaia's global security. The point being, don't do anything with what the government thinks is its property, whether sustainable or not. All that's being offered by the government is the government's property. And the one caveat to this, and some of you are going to have to search this one out, the United States government already presumptively claims you as U.S. property. So when I speak about status, that is nothing to joke about here, needing to get corrected, beating over to what do you do? I mean, gold and silver coin can help in that regard. It can't be digitized, right? I mean, we're looking for ways to avoid, don't touch, that third rail the government wants to offer as a benefit. And make every obstacle you can, whether that be pieces of information, requirements you can't meet, just can't do it, throw in its way, so that it can't be so easy to come after you. But your private agreements and actions should be made private relative to gold and silver as well. That's part of your deal with anybody. The gold and silver doesn't, at least initially, have a paper trail. And the paper trails are created usually afterward by people not keeping quiet. But so these are things that I'm bringing. These little things here need to be deeply considered as you reconfigure your life to offer some measure of insulation from organized criminals and government that will just find irregularities. It's how that works. And then the burden flips onto you. Administratively, it's already on you as well. You don't have rights. People don't have rights. They don't understand that you have responsibilities and obligations, or they never were. And that's what I tell you about how you avoid that. But the Siberian Panopticon is not something that will aid your privacy, your security, or any sense of an autonomy by your free will as we move into this future that they want. So, when I say think forward on it, really think what's happening. And I'm not saying this is easy. It's not easy at all. Because we didn't understand way too late into the game. So it's going to be a much more difficult digging out to get ourselves out of this thinking abyss and keep a distance away from the edge. And there's going to be people, as we saw in Comey Swindle, that was a great example of they will walk up, they're insane. They'll walk up to you and blame you. As we find 4 years later, that you didn't do anything, couldn't do anything, and there was nothing there at all. Talk about an irregularity that everybody got taxed for. Wow. Please take these evidences for ourselves and how difficult it can be. We didn't even get the squeezing. I mean, that was just us out amongst ourselves. So there's a whole other level of integration if the government gets focused in on you, especially the taxes. That's their bread and butter, right? Or the threat posed to you when you read stories like Jerome Magic 8 Paul Powell says inflation higher than anybody expected and his confidence not high as it was. Again, find the alternative. Gold and silver can be a start. Start using it. Get into the habit of using it with people because you have these guys. We've talked about this guy before, Magic 8-Ball, Powell. They just don't know. And we're now seeing videos that they just don't know. It's like, how are you even in that position? But it's a fiat thing. It's a system of plunder. And so then it continues, and we don't stop it. Why ending the Fed, if you will, might help, but I don't know. We can end the Fed just by not participating in its products that fast. And we're going to need a lot of people to start doing that. The whole of the population will have to start doing that. But while Powell pointed to the progress that was made on inflation in 2023, something they make up anyway, he acknowledged that this year has not continued the positive trend. Here's your notice, folks. What's going on? What's actually starting to go on? Quote, the first quarter in the United States was notable for its lack of further progress on inflation, he said. We had higher readings in the first quarter, higher than we expected. We did not expect this to be a smooth road, but these were higher than anybody expected. What that has told us is that we need to be patient and let restrictive policy do its work. I would say my confidence is that it's not as high as it was, having seen these readings in the first 3 months of the year. So we're just going to have to see where the inflation data fall out. Jerome Magic 8-Ball Powell was asked specifically about the high producer price index reading from this morning and whether he sees risks that inflation could become a bigger problem in the United States than it is elsewhere. Very important question. I would say it's actually quite mixed, and we are, of course, taking it apart and looking at it. I think markets and analysts are looking at it as, I wouldn't call it hot, I would call it sort of mixed. So looking into that bowl of word salad, it's fair to conclude he meant it's not the rosy picture we painted earlier after y'all recalculated our data, but we had to backward revise our cookbooks, and different truth is now being revealed. But nevertheless, with Magic 8-Ball, it's a mixed bag, and we don't really know what Magic 8 will tell us. Clearly, Magic 8-Ball performs beyond our expectations. Quote, is inflation going to be more persistent going forward, he asked. That would essentially mean that we've gotten the supply-side gains that we are going to get, and now it's not down to lower demand, which would take longer and potentially be more painful. I don't think we know that yet. I think we need more than a quarter's worth of data to really make a judgment on that. I don't want to give up on it at this point. Can be interpreted. We don't have a clue, and Magic 8-Ball isn't talking. Applied together, and I don't want to give up on the Magic 8-Ball, but y'all best figure on a painful, costly future of sub-adequate employment. Powell also fielded a question about the large U.S. budget deficits and the growing national debt. Quote, I think it's utterly non-controversial to say the United States fiscal policy is on an unsustainable path, he answered. Not that our fiscal position itself is unsustainable, but the path is unsustainable, meaning that we have full employment and we are running big structural deficits. We are going to have to deal with this sooner or later, and sooner is a lot more attractive than later. Sounds to me like he's saying he'll be coming after your jobs rather than convincing Congress to be physically responsible. He doesn't do the fiscal part. He does the monetary part. So it's not looking good here, folks. The article does close, though, on a potential avoidance, if not a mitigation, the market speculation aside on all this. Spot gold hit its intraday high of 2357 just as the event was getting underway, and it oscillated within an elevated range of Powell delivered his comments. I'm going to add there's been an adjustment. It went to 2420, and backed off just a little bit from there. There's predictions it's going to go even higher. So sound money, real money, constitutional specie, gold and silver coin. open up your supply lines to it. Start using it. Get it as best you can. Magic 8, monetary policy is irrelevant again to your life and function when you do that. They're dealing in this fiat system. If you're not touching it, it's not touching you. There's a lot less connections. In fact, except for it's a trust breach in my mind, in the law relative to Congress and taxation, the fiscal policy of taxation on the gold. Why it's so important for the states to get rid of that and then start minting coin again. Yeah, minting coin again. Make America great, mint coin again, and use it. Is going to be one way we're going to help mitigate, if nothing else, mitigate this problem. It's not about the price going up. It's that it's relative to what the fiat system is doing. It's as if the gold is a steady line. Don't think of it going up. It's a steady line. Reference the government's performance relative to that, and it's a declining line. And so neither did the lockdown sound like free will sovereignty on this. Again, sovereignty in gold and silver. Privacy. It starts to come back all together just by going to that alone. A lot of things pull up, but we don't have any sovereignty. The scary boogie virus, now having served its purpose, except as a reminder, as the cash cowvid is put out to pasture here, no COVID FLIRT variants detected in Russia. Remember, this was the Great Reset inset, right? So this is what I'm saying. You go to gold and silver. If we would have worn gold in the law and not worried about their fiat, nobody would have been affected in this COVID swindle that's now being turned out to pasture. But wouldn't that be because most of the big pharma is not making NRI jab juice anymore, but ready further, is it reading further here in this issue? It's interesting. I wondered if they're actually seeing the flu agent that was increasingly virulent. Those numbers of which were stolen to cover the great COVID swindle, the FLIRT, is that supposed to be a reference to the flirt with death to continue the global fear campaign? And we'll read here that they don't mention novel, and mentioning Omicron just continues the great COVID swindle cover up on that. And those aside to that, we'll see again in this reading the flu symptoms, with much ado made out of the loss of taste in this article. And it isn't talked about much, but the loss of taste can be one of the seasonal flu symptoms as well. Again, they increased what they wanted people to fear over. But we don't know from body to body what actually is causing those symptoms. To do that. Again, this is just throw the flu symptoms at people and then made them afraid. The experts just throw into the seasonal flu basket, or because their tests, so-called, had not shown accurate, as we found out. And then worse, we found out it was susceptible to manipulation. That test only indicates the presence of a protein strain. So they put all this together. That they knew, and they just made it a thing, and people believed it was something, and there was nothing there. The FLIRT variants are distant relatives of the dominant JN1 variant, all belonging to Omicron family, Rospin-Trenozdor said in a statement. The symptoms caused by the FLIRT variant are similar to previous strains and can include fever, chills, cough, nausea, muscle or body aches, and loss of taste or smell. So they go, they're wrapping it up, they're beating on this drum that it was something real. They bring up fever, chills, cough, nausea, muscle, body aches, and loss of taste or smell. But that only triggers, yes, it triggered, Roy, the old wives' tale to read the idiom, starve a cold, beat a fever. When I read those symptoms, that's what keeps coming to my mind. And as we looked at what they did, we start seeing what's going on. And we realize they're not actually talking about an infectious agent here. They're just talking about symptoms. People have those symptoms for all kinds of reasons. In this case, the body, for good and bad, is sending the signal to make food unappetizing. The one thing that they stood out that everyone fixated on, or lost taste. So maybe one wouldn't be inclined to eat at that point if you have that thing happen to you. Notwithstanding the blocked olfactory system and phlegm-coated taste buds that providing for the lack of taste, whether by nerve fatigue or lack of chemical contact, which happens in almost every sickness, it seems, relative to what we call the flu. So from all you old wives, we get some guidance. Starve that fever. In other words, fast. And if it's not understood, I'll add, drink lots of liquids. Maybe a lemon, honey, molasses with a pinch of cayenne pepper tea. If you can make it up before you are really knocked down. But what's the science on this? Feed a cold, starve a fever. We go right to the wiki. Going back to the time of Hippocrates, many people thought that fever was a disease in and of itself. His treatment of patients with fever was said to be starvation. The Greek physician has been credited with coming up with the idea, feed a cold and starve a fever. Hippocrates thought that starving the fever was the way to starve the disease. He said, the more you feed a diseased body, the worst that you make it. The old wife that Hippocrates was here. When a person is sick and has infection in their body, white blood cells release cytokines to fight infection. The cytokines affect the hypothalamus part of the brain, which may arrest hunger, resulting in a loss of appetite. The loss of taste may not be correlated, but not dismissed here either. So we just let that ride just a little bit. There's a condition in your body that gets triggered. Ruslan Medzivhotov of the Yale School of Medicine states that the lack of appetite is a common condition during an illness. Medzivhotov has discussed experiments on mice where mice that were infected with Listeria bacteria died when they were made to eat. Animals that stopped eating naturally eventually recovered. Sugar, glucose, was determined to be the detrimental. The mice survived after being fed protein and fats, but no glucose. Another study of mice infected with flu virus showed that the infected mice survived when fed glucose. The flu-infected mice died when they were not given food. Bergquist suggests that liquids are more important for recovering than eating. She said that if a cold or fever has altered a person's appetite, they should not force feed. However, a sick body needs nutrition in order to assist the immune system. So that I thought was the key, assisting the immune system. That's a novel thought. So maybe a lemon, honey, molasses with a pinch of cayenne pepper, tea isn't such a bad suggestion. Maybe better than those jabs. You think? This is a question. Maybe my mother giving us 7-Up with toast and butter once we could hold things down wasn't so far off coming out of the bad bout with the flu, followed up by with some fruit, as my memory seemed to remember on this stuff. On the other hand, today, don't dare consider ivermectin, that scientifically created global pharmaceutical, because science, folks, these murderous morons, that feed a cold, starve a fever. Maybe you old wives aren't half bad. Just refrain from gossip. I was going to add, so you too can get behind the woodshed to cure what ails you, but that might be taken wrong. So never mind. But as to taking them behind the woodshed, curing something else that ails us, Canadian court greenlights class action lawsuit against YouTube's COVID censorship. A class action lawsuit against YouTube's censorship of COVID-era speech on the platform has been allowed to proceed in Canada. The primary plaintiff in the case, which has now been greenlit by the Quebec Superior Court, is YouTuber Eloise Boy. employees. While the filing accuses the Google video platform of censoring information about vaccines, the pandemic, and the virus itself, we obtained a copy of the order for you here on the link. Boise, who runs the Elo No Wants to Know channel, states in a lawsuit that three of her videos got removed by YouTube. One of the censored videos was about censorship for allegedly violating the site's policies around medical disinformation and contradicting WHO and local health authorities' COVID narratives of the time. However, the content creator claims that the decisions represented unlawful and intentional suppression of free speech. In February, Boise revealed that in addition to having videos deleted, the censorship also branded her account anti-vaxxer and a conspiracy theorist, causing her to lose contracts. The filing cites the Charter of Human Rights and Freedoms as a document YouTube violated, while the class action status of the lawsuit stems from including any individual or legal entity in Quebec whose videos dealing with COVID got censored or who were prevented from watching such videos starting in mid-March of 2020 and onward. Google, on the other hand, argues that it's under no obligation to respect the Charter of Human Rights and Freedoms and can therefore not be held accountable for decisions to censor content it doesn't approve of, or as the giant phrased it, providing space for videos regardless of their content. Wonder what those policies are then for. Should just be one policy statement, our way or the highway. And it's not. But when the Superior Court Judge Lukas Granosik announced his decision, he noted that freedom of expression, quote, does not only mean freedom of speech, but also freedom of publication and freedom of creation. Stressing the importance that Kanakistan's Supreme Court assigned to guaranteed freedom of expression as a key building block in a democratic society, the judge concluded that, quote, if Google carries out censorship by preventing certain people from posting videos and prevents other people from viewing these videos, it thus hinders the free circulation of ideas and exposes itself to having to defend its ways of doing things. Google was ordered to stop censoring content because it contradicts health authorities, WHO, or governments, and pay $1,000 in compensation and $1,000 in punitive damages to each of the lawsuit's plaintiffs, as well as additional compensation provided by law since the filing of the request for authorization to take collective action as per the court's decision. As for those who were prevented from accessing content, the decision on damages will be the subject of future hearings. I hope you're listening here, folks, those of you that have watched this content from Behind the Woodshed. Maybe some of you syndicators and listeners Behind the Woodshed might want to see about joining this from your perspective, spreading or acquiring information and being denied. I'm not sure how that would be entered in for you, but this case looks like it's already, in a way, it's a win. And whether or not it's continued, it would be you make a presence to say that the harm is much bigger. And if you're not in Quebec, maybe look at this case and maybe fire up one where you are that's outside of there, outside of that court, and start a new one. And those of you that tried to syndicate the content Behind the Woodshed and were denied, you may have the cause. Look at that, get that paperwork, read it, see what they said. Those of you that were denied listening, could not find stuff, you have a cause. And you want to follow you want to get your documents in order to prove that you are similarly situated. That would be an equity entry, an equity joinder. So, and I'm hesitating here, but if you listen to what I'm saying, I was not against the WHO. The WHO was not relevant to local communicable disease law, which is what I was pointing people to. And lots of the content behind the woodshed has gotten taken down, even stuff before March 20th, even before misinformation, medical misinformation was even a thing. So YouTube has deprived people from hearing their local law, hearing a content that says, go look at your local law. So I found this very interesting. Not that it green lighted a class action. That should have been, of course, there shouldn't even be this case because it shouldn't happen. But while it's here and you see the paperwork filed and it's, I guess, 70% already put through, maybe you jump on this one, join it, and or take the paperwork and institute your own in Kanukistan and see if you can get another court to go with it. Look at very carefully at what the obstructions might be, the dissents might be relative to other jurisdictions. But it seems maybe Canada would, this decision may be consistent across Canada. I'm not so sure. This is an interesting opportunity, I think. And it's just the fact of, you couldn't put the content out there, even if it was I don't think they talked about it, syndicators, but you tried to do someone else's content and couldn't speak. And then the listeners, your listeners couldn't get it. And those listeners need to step up, that you want the information, in particular about the laws that you're supposed to follow. I find that just a fascinating argument, if it's an argument. Well, how would a judge really look at that? People were denied to hear about their own law and how to use it? I don't think that would go over so well with a judge, and I think that they may support your properly placed cause. So I find this a very interesting story. Glad that Eloise Moise put this forward. I don't know if it's possible to join it, but I think it's a potential opportunity, and at least an inquiry can be made, and in particular maybe Quebec. But see, being global, everybody can go and send. Yeah, you know, I was adversely affected, especially on the damages side of this last sentence on this story. What's the damages? Who knows? It might be worth $1,000 to you. I don't know. I'm not going to say it is. I don't know what it's going to do. I just find it fascinating. Just little opportunities. If you keep your head up, looking around, you listen behind the woodshed, you've been doing some study, you've been listening to me talk, you've been trying to apply it yourself. Some of you are coming right along. I know I can, when we talk, it's like I put a little bit of smile on my face and hear how your words have changed and come along across the board, and I know I'm having some effect, at least getting people to rethink what's going on. This is just that one next step. Just qualify what it is that they're looking for and see if you fit, and then just make the request. Join the damages side. You have to state your facts of how you meet the plaintiffs. There'll be someone similarly situated, but that's not real hard, actually. I'm doing that. So, very interesting. I think that's cool. It may be a fast and easy way to get into something to, if you felt, and this not just the information behind the woodshed, but anybody's information about COVID. There was a lot of it. And if you show that it's the truth, on top of that, they're not just censoring that. They're censoring truth that could have saved lives. You start to turn this thing a little bit more serious against any of these big data companies that use us for their profit and use us and hurt us by those decisions. Something that the court won't deprive the young from hearing or seeing, even if it constitutes child abuse because some government licensed agent says it's safe and effective. This story is a little bit shocking, but I think it's, again, writings on the wall. Make your decisions. Avoid. Step back. I think is the quickest answer I'll give you without reading quite yet. I'll get to it. But a little bit shocking, and I don't know how you do the answer, but to just do not participate. They need you to have a phone to do the documents, the IDs. Just don't have a phone. Don't have a computer. Don't have a computer you can apply to. Don't have a plan that you're going to apply to. How you make yourself less, more anonymous, that you have to find that. But don't volunteer that you can do all the things that need. They want you to do this. You force them to have to start giving to you, and then you tell them no. That's your consent. That's how you say, that's how you opt out. But court rejects parents. Okay, I don't know how deep I want to get on this. Remember, parents are custodians of the ward of the state called a child. So understand part of, there's a two or three meanings running in this story. It's completely true that they can do this. Your choice is to not be a parent, presumed a parent. Well, unless you are, like you're a foster parent, a foster family, that's you're considered a parent. If you're not, if you're a mother and father with offspring, you're going to have to really rethink your status here. And I don't know what your answer is going to be. If you are totally against this, there has to be a serious decision to be made and obligations and responsibilities picked up privately. The court rejects parents, the custodian of the ward of the state child, the state is taking care of through its education system, giving the minimum that's adequate. But the court rejects parents' attempts to opt kids, little goats, out of LGBTQ inclusive reading assignments. Now listen very carefully as we go through this. It's critical to understand how what the court's saying here, and I always read this with an attitude a little bit. Oh, they can't do this. Well, you got to listen to what the court said about the failure of the plaintiffs here. And I've advocated don't be these plaintiffs. Don't be these attorneys. Bring a better case, as I'm going to put there. I still don't like it, but the way the court was approached, it didn't look like they had much, actually, to decide on this. And so the what looks to be a harm will now continue. A divided three-judge panel of the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed a lower court decision denying a preliminary injunction on the basis that the parents had not yet demonstrated how the county's Board of Education book policy would infringe on their right of free expression of religion. You better take and analyze that sentence very carefully and pull out the answer for you. Three sets of parents who are Muslim, Jewish, and Christian, along with the Parental Rights Organization, sued the Maryland School District after it said it was no longer allow parents to opt their children out of lessons that used a slate of newly approved LGBTQ inclusive books. The parents argued that the books, quote, contradict their sincerely held religious beliefs about marriage, human sexuality, and gender, close quote, and that the lack of an opt-out policy violates their children's First Amendment right to free expression of religion. U.S. Circuit Judge G. Stephen Aggie, writing for the majority in the opinion, said that there was not enough evidence on the record to assess how the books were being used in the classroom and, therefore, to assess the likelihood of the case succeeding. Let me interject here. That's the standard on an injunction. The likelihood of it succeeding has to be determined from the evidence. And apparently this court says there wasn't enough. If any, we take no view on whether the parents will be able to present evidence sufficient to support any of their various theories once they have the opportunity to develop a record as the circumstances surrounding the board's decision and how the challenged texts are actually being used in school, Aggie, appointed by the former President George W. Bush, wrote, quote, at this early stage, however, given the parents' broad claims, the very high burden required to obtaining a preliminary injunction, and the scant record before us, we are constrained to affirm the district court's order denying a preliminary injunction, he continued in the opinion, which was joined by U.S. Circuit Judge DeAndrea Benjamin, an appointee of President Biden. Let me go back up and see here what they're saying is an injunction is to maintain status quo if the issue cannot overthrow it. And that's all they're saying here. But they gave a list of things that were defective in the case before them. And I asked, this is one of those instructive cases. I'm not going to analyze right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm saying that there is a standards. If you go read what an injunction requires, they just listed about everything that you're supposed to produce in order to prevail. And apparently it was all missing. I would have to say this is, again, the attorneys messed up. If this is the truth, let me just leave it on the face of it, not going, you know, too corrupt. If this is the truth, then the attorneys did not write their complaint and did not support the complaint. It's not adequate, not sufficient relative to an injunction. It's a special proceeding inside the case. It's the preliminary injunction. They're going to put a case forward. We're going to try and shut down this thing while we're litigating. Apparently, they brought really nothing. And they didn't develop it, a record from before. What have I been advocating like forever? Make sure you develop the record, the right record, the proper record, the record that speaks to the elements you're going to have to talk to in the future. Apparently that was not done. And the judges, I'm going to have to give it to them on this, just on the face of it. They had nothing to decide. There's nothing to do to overthrow what is the government's presumed to have done right. You can't, you know, the government, the courts are clear. You can't presume the government always doing wrong. Well, that's a part of a wrong thing, especially when you watch Kobe swindle, but that's not what I'm talking about here. Folks are adamant about these things. You better bring your court cases a lot better than this one. In August 2023, U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman found that the parents were unlikely to succeed on the merits and denied the request to keep the policy in place while the case proceeds. She found that they failed to show that the lack of an opt-out policy would result in the indoctrination of their children or coerce their children to violate or change their religious beliefs. Quote, the parents still may instruct their children on their religious beliefs regarding sexuality, marriage, and gender, and each family may place contrary views in its religious context, Boardman wrote in the order last year. Quote, no government action prevents the parents from freely discussing the topics raised in the storybooks with their children or teaching their children as they wish, she added. To me, that's the, I hear this all at these statements, how cynical that is. However, if the court, see, and the other problem, if the court won't see the harm in the mere exposure of the information, it seems to me it's the only answer is to get out of her my people and instruct your little ones at home and do not have them be tainted by this information. I believe it would be a child abuse to tell little kids about this, but where no one knows that they're ready and could not. And I can't remember back when, but there's some sense in me that there's, as a little one, little guy, just things in the world, shocking. They're just too beyond a little mind to keep up with. In lots of different areas, little things that just stay with you for quite a long time, if not forever, or are lost within yourself that you just embrace or whatever you get around, you cope with, and you just move on, but it affects how you go and do things. That, if the court won't see the harm in the first instance, I'd be looking at maybe focusing on that one, and that has to be proven in this case. I think that the actions that were, the statements I see here offered, if they were in the, given that they were in the complaint, were probably the wrong direction to take this at any rate. But you see, the court cynically says, well, we're not stopping you. You can bring them home and you can teach them what you want. You're not showing how that's interfering. I think anybody who's of a religious faith and has their books of religion, they're explaining it, can find the passages that will show it violates it. Not affects it, it violates it. So whether it's opt out or not, I don't know. But this almost looks like you have to take the more strong position. Otherwise, on all this, it appears to me that the attorneys did not bring in admissible evidence to support their claims, and that that's what needs to be done, and we're going to see this problem over and over and over again, however legitimate the discussion might be. Again, wrongly argued is not justice. And I see attorneys do this all the time. And so it's not just attorney. I mean, people do it too. When I say you bring your evidence, you just don't talk and talk and talk and talk either. You have to bring on point of the elements that you're looking to overthrow relative to the imposition of the government, which is presumed correct. You have when they say a high bar, this is a fairly high bar. But if this is the way, and I would try to go in one more time, I'd see how the court treats it with a better better claim. And if they dismissed it again, the decision is, do you continue your little ones in the secular courts, schools, and or do you cleave yourself from the society in that way? And we're coming to a time these decisions of separating the wheat from the chaff is becoming in our face right now. And that's not a joke. That's not something to dismiss. It's partly what I say about being able to separate yourself, give yourself a space away and different someplace else, some way, some law, some foundation different than what we see happening here. So I hope something I said today is enlightening, ties things together, watches our future get toward this thing that we can avoid. Our consent is our engagement. Stop engaging and understand how to keep that distance. It's not a guaranteed win to do so, but a better foundation is going to be a lot better than having nothing. And you're not going to do it with your opinions, I can tell you that. This was BTW RLM 577. And really, you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. You protect yourself and your own, and because no one's going to do it for you. And I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs, nature willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. Hal's words ignite. Hide a cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.